This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us. And what a very incredibly busy weekend we had in the world of sports. Man, we had it all. We had basketball. We had hockey. We had horse racing. We had auto racing. We had all sorts of fun stuff. But I'm going to tell you right now, and one of the things that I pride myself on in doing this show is I am okay to admit when I've made a mistake, when I'm wrong. And boy, I've never been happier to admit that I was wrong. I buried the Philadelphia 76ers and the Dallas Mavericks. A little bit less on Philadelphia's side because I knew with Joel Embiid, if he'd come back in Game 3 and the Sixers could win Game 3, they could possibly make a decent series out of this. But Dallas, to me, was dead in the water. Without any help for Luka Doncic, I thought Dallas was absolutely dead. Now, I did say, you know, Dallas could win a game at home, but Phoenix will control this series and win this thing in 5. But last night, again, Dallas gets 26 from Luka, but he got help. Jalen Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, they all chipped in a 10-point victory for the Mavericks. And now they've evened up that series at 2. And then James Harden with 31 points for the Sixers yesterday as they beat the Miami Heat by 8 points, evening up their series at 2. When I went into the weekend, I thought that there were two series that I thought had the potential to really be very entertaining. And that was Boston and Milwaukee and Golden State and Memphis. And now it looks like Dallas and Philadelphia have a lot of potential to be the better series and then the other two. Now, I still think Boston and Milwaukee could be very interesting. But there's a development out of Memphis and Golden State with Ja Morant suffering a knee injury in the fourth quarter on Saturday that now makes me think Memphis has zero chance of winning that series at all as they play Game 4 tonight out in San Francisco. It is great to see this development. It is great to see that these semifinal conference matchups are turning into series that have got some meat to them. And I'm glad, for example, that Dallas, who I liked all season, is finally doing the thing that they needed to do in this series, which is not 100% rely on Luka Doncic to score 40 points a game, that they actually went out and got good production from others to help beat the Phoenix Suns in Game 4. Now, both Philadelphia and Miami and Dallas and Phoenix are now basically best 2 out of 3. That's exactly what I wanted to see this weekend. We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, and it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Like I said earlier, what a great weekend in sports this week. I mean, the NBA playoff series tightening up, better games, better circumstances for the NBA. The NHL had some very good games over the weekend in their first-round matchups in the Stanley Cup playoffs. A epic, historic Kentucky Derby, which we'll get to later on in this hour. Formula One was in Miami for the Miami Grand Prix. Darlington's race was really interesting as well. There's really a baseball. I mean, the Mets got to 20 wins, first major league team to get to 20 wins. So much to dissect. But I think that what the NBA had this weekend was extremely important to these games because, again, as I said at the top of the hour, I think two teams looked absolutely dead, absolutely dead. And I'm very glad I was wrong because I blew off these series as even with Joel Embiid coming back, I thought, you know, I just still think Miami just is going to get one in Philadelphia, and it's just going to make it too difficult for the Sixers to win this series, even with Joel Embiid coming back in Game 3. And remember, it wasn't even a sure thing that he was coming back in Game 3. They didn't even know if he was going to come back in Game 3. So going into the weekend on Friday's show, I'm like, well, it looks like Philadelphia is dead. It looks like Dallas is dead because they don't have anything else other than Luka. But both teams were able to get those very important home victories and tighten up this series. Now it's a best 2 out of 3 for Phoenix and Miami. They find themselves up 2 games to none, and now they're in a best 2 out of 3. So we'll get to those series coming up in the NBA and the rest of the sports news. But hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay at Total Wine and More, you'll discover a whole lot more. like the friendly smile of an expert guide ready to help you find the perfect bottle, and the confidence of knowing that you just found something special. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. B21. Again, Total Wine and more. All right, so let's get to the Philadelphia series first. Okay, so it seems obvious that if Joel Embiid is coming back in a series in which Philadelphia is down 0-2 without him, then naturally you can assume that, okay, this series could take the turn for Philadelphia. Of course, Joel Embiid is that important of a player. We get it, right? An MVP candidate. And he's missing in the first two games, and Philadelphia can't figure out what to do. So much is reliant on James Harden, but when he doesn't have anybody to go to, you can tighten up the defense on James Harden, and that bogs him down. And that's what Miami was able to do in the first two games of this series. But since Joel Embiid has come back, what you have to do is you have to give some really good space to James Harden, and he can do a couple of things with that, what we've seen in the past, right? He can create an offensive flow for his team, or he can find a way to knock down some shots, which is what he did in game four yesterday. He took only 18 shots in this game, but he made 8 of them, and 6 of them were from behind the arc. So now that's going to draw some defenders, and that's going to allow James Harden to do what James Harden does best, which is contribute offensively in terms of feeding the basketball to a guy like Joel Embiid, who had 24 points, or anybody else that is contributing to what Philadelphia does. In reality, this is basically the statistic from yesterday's game that is extremely important, because a lot has been said about James Harden and his lack or his declining skills of late, which is sort of natural as a player gets older. But this is the reason Daryl Morey wanted to bring him in. This is the reason why he wanted to trade badly to bring James Harden in. Because when Harden is getting off a defensive set that he likes to play against, then he can do really good things for your team. And that's what Joel Embiid needed for this Philadelphia team to be a championship-worthy team. A facilitator like James Harden. And we hadn't seen this in this series until this weekend because, again, he had nobody to facilitate towards, right? He didn't really have anybody else. So if you're Miami, you don't give him the space that he so craves. But you have to keep the Philadelphia offense honest, so you have to give him a little bit more space with Joel Embiid on the floor, and that's when Harden is able to do his work. And that is when he's able to feed in Embiid, and Embiid has 24 points. But it was Harden that led the team in scoring with 31 in this game, as they have now evened up this series at 2 games apiece. This is exactly the Philadelphia 76er team that Daryl Morey wanted to create when he brought Harden in. And now, as I said earlier, this becomes a best 2 out of 3 with now Philadelphia in more a much better position to win this series than they were even in game 3 with Joel Embiid back. Because now there looks like there is a very nice flow to this offense. And this is where Spoelstra and his defensive mindset has to get to work on how do you shut this down without compromising your coverage of Joel Embiid in the middle. That's a big problem. Because you don't necessarily want to give James Harden the space he craves because he's very, very dangerous when he does it. But you know if you tighten up that space with Harden, that does free up an opportunity for Embiid to get single coverage, and you don't want that. So this is a very, very problematic position for the Miami Heat to be in. But again, I don't know if Harden is a 31-point scorer the rest of the way. This was just one of those nights where he's knocking down shots from behind the arc. That's where he got his points. You know, that's where he got most of his points. 18 of them came from the 3-point line of the 31, 9 from the free throw line, and 2 other field goals in this basketball game. Now, what if the 3 isn't hitting for Harden, right? Then you don't necessarily have, if you're Miami, you put yourself in a position to win the game. But it also means that Embiid may score a lot more than 24 points. But I am, again, I said if Embiid comes back that this could be a series, but I didn't even know that he could come back for game 3. I'm glad it is. I was dead wrong about the Mavericks, because the Mavericks, even if I felt like somebody else would contribute to Dallas, I thought Phoenix was in too much control of this series. But Luka Doncic scored 26 points and had 11 assists in this game. He did not need to score 40. Why? Because Dorian Finney-Smith had 24, and he knocked down 8 of the team's 23-pointers in last night's win. And that is exactly what Jason Kidd is looking for. This is the kind of way Dallas is going to win this series. It is not Luka scoring 40 points and everybody else chipping in 12, 11, 9, whatever it may be. You need a Jalen Brunson to score 18. You need Dorian Finney-Smith to score a 24. Maybe even somebody off the bench like Spencer Dinwiddie or Maxi Kleber getting into double figures as well. But again, this game last night for Dallas was won behind the arc. Dallas hit 23-pointers while Phoenix was held to 9. And I think, and again, to have Chris Paul foul out in this game after 23 minutes was very big for Phoenix in terms of the way they lost this game. But I'm very, very glad that Dallas is now back in the series. I've liked the Mavericks all season. I thought Dallas could win the West. Even as a 4 seed, I thought they could win the West. Even as good as Golden State and Memphis and, of course, Phoenix, their opponent now, I still thought Dallas had the ability to win this conference. There were times during the regular season Dallas was playing the best basketball in the NBA. And I thought, boy, if they could put, they could just bottle this up and save it for May, then we could have a team coming out of the 4 seed in the Western Conference representing the West in the NBA Finals. But those first two games of the series show nothing like the Dallas teams that we saw at moments of excellence during the regular season. Not at all. But now they did. But again, there's some contributing factors here. I don't think Phoenix is going to go 9 for 25 from the three-point line, and I don't think Chris Paul is going to foul out 23 minutes into the game. That's 6 personal fouls in 23 minutes. My God. That's one every 4 minutes, right? I mean, finishing with 5 points. Chris Paul is going to get you more than 5 points if he's on the floor for longer than 32 minutes. But 23? You're losing Chris Paul in this game? I mean, good for Dallas for being able to draw those kind of fouls on Paul. But if Paul doesn't foul out in this game, you know, these games are much, much tighter than a 10-point victory for the Mavs. But you can see a little bit more confidence in this Dallas team. You can see the way they played yesterday. Luka's really enjoying this, I think, more than having to score 45 points, you know, in a game or 35 points like he did in game one, and then looking around and not seeing anybody else contributing to the overall success of the team. I think this is the best way for Dallas to win these games. Now, I still think Dallas in the offseason, if you're Mark Cuban and you're the brain trusts around that team, the general managers, and you got to go out and get him a legitimate star. Legitimate star. Lee Ellis told us that last week. When they had Kristaps Porzingis, they wanted to get out of his contract. They need to pair him up with another player on the level even higher than a Kristaps Porzingis. Because Jalen Brunson is a nice player. Dorian Finney-Smith, a nice player. But he needs a legitimate, you know, a second star. A second star guard or somebody on that team. Or forward on that team that can contribute as much as he can. All right, we're going to continue our NBA talk. We're also going to get into the Kentucky Derby, which I thought was one of the best Kentucky Derbies in the history of the Derby of my lifetime. I can't speak for one that was running like 1932 or 1885. But in my lifetime, the Kentucky Derby was as good of a sporting event as we've got. We'll talk about that next. We'll also get back into the NBA because the Boston-Milwaukee series was just lit up with bad calls, and Ja Morant not playing possibly tonight in game 4 has everybody wondering if the Golden State-Memphis series is just too physical. But coming up next, why the Derby was an absolute classic on Saturday as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Calls. Good Monday to you. So as I was saying at the top of the hour, loaded weekend of sports. I mean, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs. You had the Kentucky Derby Saturday. You had 2 auto races yesterday in the United States. You had the Darlington race for NASCAR. You had the Miami Grand Prix for Formula One. 2 good races there. So a lot of stuff to watch out for. Of course, Major League Baseball was going on this weekend. A couple of rainouts, a couple of doubleheaders yesterday. The Mets and the Yankees were in doubleheader actions. There was Kansas City and I think they were in a doubleheader as well with Baltimore. So a lot of rain has disrupted some baseball over the weekend. But nevertheless, good loaded weekend of sports. So the Kentucky Derby Saturday at Churchill Downs, and we talked about it at the beginning of late last week, saying how the last 3 races at the first running of the Triple Crown were all kind of controversial and disruptive. You know, you go to 2019 and you had the winning horse blocked another horse. He later was disqualified. And then you had COVID in 2020 move the Kentucky Derby to the fall. And I don't think many people paid attention to it when it was run because, you know, we were kind of in football season and we're still in COVID protocol and nobody was there. And I think it was just like run the race to run the race just to get it in the history books. And then you had last year with Medina Spirit winning and then the controversy of the horse being doped up and Bob Baffert being suspended. So it had not been a very good 3 years for the Kentucky Derby, kind of in this kind of mess. I mean, the 2019 Derby, which ended in a controversy because of the horse, you know, blocking another horse and getting disqualified. It was a big decision by the stewards to take away a Kentucky Derby from a horse. I mean, everything that comes with winning a Kentucky Derby in terms of breeders' fees and just the place in history and all of that. I mean, horses don't get to come back and run the Kentucky Derby. It's not like you get to try again next year, right? I mean, if you win the Daytona 500 as a driver and your car is disqualified, you can run the Daytona 500 next year, try to win it in years to come. Horses, that's it. You're only 3 years old once, right? So that it was a big decision, but it was controversial. But nevertheless, good horse racing people said that was, you know, the right call. Then you get this Derby, and then you get the excitement of a full packed house and sort of, okay, you know, let's get a nice little reset button after 3 years of kind of stories outside the actual running. And here was the call. We've got about a minute or so. So it's going to be a little long, but about a minute or so here. Here is the call of the Kentucky Derby and the energy and excitement of this race.
Zozos is next after 3/4 in 1:10.45. And now Epicenter comes splitting horses and is moving up quickly as Crown Pride takes the lead around the far turn. It is Crown Pride battling with Messier. They're stride for stride. Epicenter and Zozos in behind them. Cyberknife swings up on the outside. Sandon gets the rail run and they're into the stretch. And it's Messier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
He doesn't even mention the horse in any setup at all until the last second.
That clip is about a minute long. There were 6 seconds left in that clip until he said Rich Strike.
Right.
It's right. Absolutely incredible.
He never mentions the horse.
Nope.
The horse comes out of nowhere and wins the Kentucky Derby. I watched the replay of this thing at least 10 times.
At least
10 times. I watched it. I had it. I rewound it. Then I went to YouTube and I was watching it again. And I just sat on my laptop and watched it over and over again to try to find the horse. So this is before the aerial shots. I was just watching the general,
the TV shot.
The TV shot. I didn't any other analysis that came later. Like yesterday, everybody was retweeting the aerial shot that NBC put out where they showed you where the horse was and how the horse got through. I watched and tried to find the horse. I couldn't find the horse in the regular broadcast. And then I finally did. And then I watched it. I watched it like 5 times to see how Sonny Leone took the horse in traffic and went, okay. All right, there's a gap. Let's get through here. He takes the horse to the left through this little gap, and then he slides the horse through the gap, and then it's like a NASCAR car with clean air.
Yep.
They just get faster. They see the clean air, and he just takes off, and that horse is cooking. I mean cooking down that stretch. And I don't know if the two jockeys who were Sandon and Epicenter, I don't know if they were playing off each other, meaning I'm going to try to get this horse to go as fast as it can, but I don't want, I'm just
All I'm doing is making sure I'm ahead of the other guy or battling the other guy. I don't think either one of them had any idea Rich Strike was on the left-hand side plowing through the field.
Epicenter was the one in the lead, right?
Right.
I'm certain the jockey was looking right the entire time.
All you're doing is looking at Zandon. You don't notice because he's not in your left peripheral view until late.
Until you see him going by.
Right. So the whole stretch, once Epicenter and Zandon get ahead of the pack, right, when there's Messier and Crown Prince, once they clear those horses and it's just those two, there's nothing on your left. The only thing you're doing if you're Epicenter is looking at your right at Zandon, and Zandon is looking at the left at Epicenter, and neither one can see Rich Strike coming off the rail. No one can see this horse coming off the rail. And it was marvelous. And then this is why, listen, I love all you people that say, I wish I was living in the 50s. Good. You go live in the 50s. I like living in modern times where you have drone cameras. Okay. Go ahead. Live in the 50s with the one camera Kentucky Derby take. Good luck. Go have fun with that. I prefer drone cams, put a camera, computer graphics, break down speed angles. Go ahead. Live in the soda pop fountain of the 50s and listen to Buddy Holly. I will be more than happy to take technology today to break down this Kentucky Derby, because that drone footage is the best footage you have in sports.
Oh my God.
That is one of the greatest camera shots in sports.
Just to
see that horse maneuver from above is fantastic.
I mean, you have the overhead shot, which is awesome, but to have the computer graphic letting you know this is Rich Strike, watch him.
Yeah.
And you can completely ignore every single other horse that's running at that moment and just watch Rich Strike and the beauty of what, like you said, he found a lane on the inside, turned on the afterburners, and then just slid just perfectly right and just split a whole group of horses, and then, I don't know, hit into sixth gear. Eighth gear. I don't know what gear he hit it in.
Is it possible Sonny Leone, the jockey? Not even the trainer, because even the trainer was like shocked.
Oh, God.
Even the trainer was shocked. Is it possible Sonny Leone was the only person on planet Earth that thought that horse could win the Kentucky Derby?
Maybe.
Because he maneuvered that horse and then just went, let's go. And
we got here.
Like, gone.
And my favorite thing about this, too, is then you hear the stories like, he didn't know he was going to be in the race until Friday.
Right, exactly. Oh, that was the other angle to it. He didn't even know he was going to be in the race. I mean, it was...
They signed the paperwork 30 seconds before deadline. I don't know about that part. Maybe that's, maybe they're embellishing that a little bit, but...
Let's make more of the legend than...
But I mean, the fact that you didn't sign it until Friday is incredible.
It changes everything. It changes the lives of, like, the trainer even said, it's life-changing.
Yep.
What happened? It's life-changing for everybody that was involved in this horse. It's so much, not even like the owner, obviously, right? But Sonny Leone, the jockey, is going down in history as riding one of the greatest horse races in the history of the sport. I mean, that's what the historians of the sport, who know a lot more about it than me, are saying. It's one thing to guide Secretariat to a win, right? Or Steve Coffin on Affirmed in 1977. Those are fine. And Willie Shoemaker was on plenty of good Derby winners. But to take an 80-1 long shot and maneuver that horse like he did from traffic coming off that final turn, that big final sweeping turn where he's got nothing but horses in front of him all over the place. There's three horses in front of him. There's a horse to his left. There's a horse to his right. He's in a box. There's no place to go. You're just riding along with other horses until, whoop, there's the gap. Let's go through there, horse. Let's make it through there, Rich Strike.
And I mean, now, they already know their next race. I mean, they punched their ticket for the Belmont. They punched their ticket for the Preakness.
They own right now. It's May. It's early May. They own one of the best stories of 2022.
Yep.
It was that good. Back to the NBA. Memphis Golden State. Is this too physical? As Jordan Poole is blamed for Ja Morant's knee injury, and Boston and Milwaukee go down to the wire, and everyone's complaining in Boston about a missed call. We'll talk about those two games coming up next. So Wake Up Call continues on a Monday.
Wake-Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Sports Map Radio as we continue. I tried to get my brother to watch the Miami Grand Prix. He said, he goes, I watched the beginning, then I had to do some work. Like, ah, oh, come on. I'm trying to get him into it. I've been trying to get him into this to auto racing for years. He just won't budge. You know why he won't budge? Because I like it. Because I like it and I know about
it. Well, that's the brotherly thing to do.
No, he's like, you know, that's you. I'm not going to. But I told him, because he called me up and he said, call me up in the afternoon. He goes, you watching the Miami Grand Prix? I go, of course I am. And he goes, yeah, I see it's a big deal. I go, yeah, it's a big deal. It's the United States. You know, it's we have these events. It's a big deal. And I was like, are you going to watch it? He goes, I don't know. I go, well, the Celtics aren't playing. And he goes, yeah, man, maybe. So then when the race started, I said, you watch it? He goes, yeah, I saw the beginning. Then I had to go to work. I go, okay, that's all I need you to watch the beginning. That's it. So, but the Celtics game Saturday night. Oh, yeah, yeah, that game. So if you missed that one from Saturday, that was a 103-101 victory by Milwaukee. Giannis was great. I tell you, we say this all the time, like we're surprised Giannis has good games. I love the way that we're still like, wow, that Giannis, man, he can play basketball. It's not like he's an MVP or anything or a champion, you know, winning the NBA Finals or anything like that. Like, wow, Giannis, 42 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists. That Giannis, man, he can play some basketball. Well, he didn't have a very good game two in Boston, so he bounced back with a very, very nice game three win. But this game is, you know, is kind of being remembered for what happened at the end. So Boston was trailing by three, and they inbounded the ball to Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart attempted to make a shot, but got fouled by Jrue Holiday. Now, the officials called it a, you know, on-the-floor foul rather than a shooting foul, which meant Smart would go to the line only for two and not three, even though he was trying to attempt a three to tie the game. So Ime Udoka was very adamant, saying, look, he was trying to go for the three. Why isn't he getting three shots at the free throw line to try to tie this game up? And the official says, well, he instead of shooting, he was swinging his arm. Why not an attempt at shooting? In which the Celtics sort of said, no, that's baloney. That's not true. Now, Marcus Smart said, well, isn't it obvious? Like, if I'm getting the ball with seconds remaining, isn't it obvious I'm going to try to shoot because they're going to try to foul me to send me to the free throw line for two shots? Right, the obvious strategic play is as soon as I get the ball, they're going to foul me, put me at the line, and force us to make three the hard way, which is me making the first one and then me missing the second one and somebody on my team getting the ball off the rebound and the putback to tie the game. So Milwaukee has a better chance of going that route to see if they have to, if the game is tied, rather than me taking a three. But that's not what Mike Budenholzer said afterwards. Budenholzer said, no, that wasn't our strategy. Our strategy wasn't to foul on purpose. It wasn't to intentional foul. I don't necessarily buy that because I agree with Marcus Smart. I think that is the better play. If you're Milwaukee, don't give a shot off. But again, if you're Milwaukee, a shot just ties the game, right? And since teams relatively shoot, 30% at best from the three-point line sometimes, 33, 35% is really good from the three-point line. You could take your chance that he takes the shot contested but no foul and miss it, and then you win the game. Or, again, make him do it the hard way. Make Marcus make the first one, because if he misses the first one, forget it. But if he makes the first one, then you still have the problem of missing on purpose, making sure that Boston gets the rebound and puts it back up and in, which is kind of a hard thing to do. It's not impossible. It's not like, I don't know, some other impossible things in sports, like, I don't know, getting an onside kick. But it's still hard to do. So that was what happened yesterday. So Boston fans are furious because they thought it was actually a shooting foul. It would have put him on the line for three with a chance to tie the game at the line. Instead, it was a two-shot foul, and Boston ended up losing the game. That being said, I thought it could have gone either way. I'm trying to be more objective here. I thought it could have gone either way. I don't think it's as obvious as Udoka makes it out to be or Smart makes it out to be, and I don't think it's – I think there is some wiggle room. If they had called it a shooting foul, I would have said, it kind of looks like a shooting foul to me. But I would have also said, but it could have been called the other way. Same thing here. You want to say it's an on-the-floor flat foul, that's fine. You want to say it was a shooting foul, to me, it borderline. I don't think it's outrageous. I don't think it's terrible. I don't think any of that stuff that I kind of saw on Twitter, that's what Twitter is. That's what it's for. I get it. But I don't think it's either one. Nevertheless, that's just the way I saw it. I am sure that there are plenty of people who really, truly believe that that Boston was hosed. Just don't go on the right. It's not true. They wouldn't get hosed on purpose or any nonsense like that. If it was a wrong call, it was a just wrong call. But that series looks really good. That series looks good. But I'm done predicting these series now. Done. Did my thing late last week, burying two teams that came alive. I'm done.
I was even nervous for you in the first segment of the show. I mean, because you weren't really giving you made the comment that Harden can't sustain this,
right?
And I 100% agree with you, but that just feels like Harden is going to show you up again.
He might just do that. Yeah, exactly.
He might just say, "Let Tony D. You don't know anything. Watch this."
Exactly. They might. You know, who knows? I think that this was. I'm really curious because I like the strategy of playoff basketball. I know I've said it a million times, but that's one of the reasons why I like these 7-game series. I love to see smart basketball people breaking down film, going, okay, got two days or whatever it is between games. Let's figure out what we did wrong. Let's figure out what we're doing. Because I think Eric Spoelstra, when he sees how much space Harden was getting in this game, again, you got to keep it honest because, again, you got Joel Embiid back on the floor, so you can't tighten him up like you did in the first two games of the series. But there's got to be a way to sort of say, let's neutralize this a little bit more than what we were doing so we don't give him enough space where we're guarding, you know, the potential pass in the paint to Embiid, but we're leaving him open to take threes. Because if Harden is hitting the threes, then you go, oh, okay, we got to draw the defense out now. It's exactly what Harden wants you to do, right? Because Harden's like, look, if you leave me space, I'll hit shots from the outside. If you tighten up the defense and leave Embiid a little bit more space, I'll feed him the basketball. And so if you're Spoelstra, how do you manage that so that you can somewhat slow that down enough so that those two aren't in connection with each other? Let Tyrese Maxey get his points. Let Tobias Harris get points. But how do you control Embiid in the paint, getting the ball from Harden when you've tightened the defense up on Harden? I think if you're Spoelstra, this is what you're doing going into game five. So I'm curious to see what he does. Now, the Memphis Golden State series. Because, again, I couldn't have been more wrong coming up this weekend. My goodness. Because I said Golden State and Memphis is the best series in the league right now. I said, you got Phoenix with the 2-0 lead. You got Miami with the 2-0 lead. You've got problems with both Dallas. You got problems with both Philadelphia. You got Boston, Milwaukee could be a good series. We'll see. But I think Ja Morant, Steph Curry, Memphis, and Golden State, the first two games were epic. Fourth quarters were great. All of that, this is going to be the series. Well, it wasn't because Saturday night, was a 30-point blowout by Golden State. 30-point blowout. And in that fourth quarter, when Golden State was up and in control, Ja Morant suffered a knee injury. Now, he suffered a tweak in the injury early in the game, but it was exacerbated by Jordan Poole, who, on a trap play near half court, reached for the basketball and grabbed Morant's knee. Now, that, of course, because where are we, right? Where are we on instant reaction social media? That's a dirty play, right? Well, he's going for the basketball and inadvertently grabs a knee. I don't think Jordan Poole did this on purpose. I don't. I don't think he did this on purpose. I think it was just, whoops, sorry, went for the basketball, grabbed a knee. So Morant leaves the game. He is now very unlikely to play tonight. He could play. He's not been ruled out. But he's very unlikely to play. Well, that just means one thing. Memphis is done. Done. That's it. Good night. Ja Morant's the only reason they were in this series. Ja Morant's the only reason they're going to win this series. And that's saying a lot because if you followed them during the regular season, they actually had great games without him. A lot of great games without him. Went on a winning streak without him. Found other ways to get contributions from everybody else. But not in this series. That's not the regular season. That's not the regular season when you can sprinkle in some good wins in one night against good teams and then better wins against terrible teams. So you go on like a 7-game win streak without Ja Morant, but four of those teams are against teams with losing records, right? I don't think this Memphis team is built to beat this Golden State team on the road. Now, if it was at home, they might feed off the crowd enough where Desmond Bane goes off for 32 points or Jaren Jackson, who's the best defender on the team and still contributes offensively, fine. But not game four in San Francisco. Ja Morant doesn't play. They're down 3-1 going into game five. And that's too bad. That's too bad. Is this series too physical? Yes, it is. But I think everything is in context here, right? Because you had Gary Payton II getting hit by Dylan Brooks when Brooks didn't even leave the floor, just knocked him in the head as he was going for a layup. Very flagrant, got suspended for a game. You had Draymond Green pulling down, Desmond Bane's jersey, I believe, in game number one that caused him to get ejected. So, yes, it's been a very physical series. And now in game three, you have another physical altercation that's controversial in Jordan Poole grabbing the knee of Ja Morant. Yes. Is that out of the realm of playoff basketball? Not really. I get where Steve Kerr was saying that Dylan Brooks, you know, broke the code, if you will. When a guy's going for a layup, you don't hack him in the head from behind. Right? I mean, this isn't Kurt Rambis with a clothesline. Let's be honest here. But at the same time, I don't think that. Let's go to Draymond Green's pull down, for example. Draymond Green grabbed a jersey on his way down, pulled down I think it was Desmond Bane that got pulled down, but he pulled down. No, Jordan Clark. I'm sorry, Jordan Clark. Pulled down Jordan Clark. Now, you could watch the Zapruder film effect of that, right? And see he's going for the block and the hand comes and grabs the jersey and whatnot. But the reason he got ejected was because when the officials looked at that in game one, they said, look, he's controlling the fall, right? He's controlling the fall enough that the player that's falling can't even brace himself because he's not really in control of the fall. And next thing you know, you could bang your head, bust it open, all of those kind of things. So regardless of intent, it's enough grabbing a jersey and holding onto that jersey on the way down to the court when a player is falling is enough to ejection. Okay. Dylan Brooks, totally blatant without question. I think Dylan Brooks did it on purpose. Gary Payton II is running in for a layup. I don't care if it's payback for what happened to Jordan Clark. I don't care what it was. I totally believe that Dylan Brooks went bonk. And that's it. Is Jordan Poole on the same level of those? Watch the play. It's a trap play. It's near half court. They've got him trapped, double teamed. Poole reaches around to try to get to the basketball. While he's reaching around, Morant sort of spins away from the hand. And as he's reaching to grab the basketball, he reaches and grabs the knee instead. I don't think it was purposeful. Again, anytime you slow-mo anything, you're going to make it more dramatic than it already is. But I don't think that's the case. So is this series, you know, too physical? Well, yeah, it could be. It's too physical, but you got to take everything in context. I think two of them were, one of them I don't think was blatant at all. I don't necessarily think Draymond was, but he's a victim of his reputation. I think one play was clearly flagrant, clearly deserved an ejection and a fine and everything like that. And that was the game two call. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We will have Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up in hour number two. We will also have a buy or sell coming up in hour two. I always like those when we do that. The underdog edition?
Underdog edition.
Is that when criminals in this world appear and break the laws that they should fear and frighten all who see or hear, the cry goes out for far and near for underdog.
Yeah, it might.
Is that the one?
We might have something like that.
Poor Polly Purebred.
I didn't even remember
did
that, man.
Did you remember that cartoon?
Yeah, I remember that cartoon way back in the
great.
Day. But I couldn't tell you anybody else in that other than underdog.
I forget the main villain's name, though. Sinister.
And something. Even the movie that came out recently. Where yeah, Jason Lee was the voice of underdog.
Right.
I actually liked him as the voice of underdog.
I used to love the underdog cartoon, but at the end, it was always a little freaky for me as a little child because there would be this big monster just crushing a city. And then the announcer would go, "It looks like this is the end of our episode."
Always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite cartoons of subplots was the villainer, the sinister doctor guy that Underdog used to fight. He had this gun that could take all the water out of anything. So he had a suitcase, and in the suitcase was basically the shrunken water content of whatever he shot the gun at. So lakes, oceans, whatever. He was stealing all the water in the world. And he was keeping all the vials in this suitcase. And I thought, how great. He's just basically altering the planet in a disastrous way. Oh, what a cartoon. The Underdog used to get the crap beat out of him. And then he used to have to go into that power ring. Remember that? He used to have that ring. And he'd have like some drug. And he'd be like, oh, I'm beat
roiding up.
If I only had a wake me up pill. Ha ha. And boom, there'd be a little ball of cocaine. I mean, power pellet that he would pop in. And he'd fight the villain. Oh, those Underdog cards. Whoa, the 60s and 70s. What a good time to be alive. All right, hour two coming up next on Sports Map Radio.